The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is good to be here with you today. You know what today is, right? Today is Holocaust Remembrance Day. And I want to deal with this today. I want to address this because I'm a cultural observer. And one of the things I've noticed is that the Holocaust, believe it or not, is not necessarily being taught in all of our schools anymore. And I'm thinking, how can you not teach about this horrible chapter? It's really not that long ago, right? Also, we're seeing a rise in anti-Semitism. And I just don't get it. I just don't understand why. And this seems to have been the case across the centuries, doesn't it? We'll talk about it. Roy Shoman's going to be joining me in just a moment here. We'll get his take on what's going on. But let me invite you to join the conversation. If you want to sound off, maybe you're seeing in your school, maybe you've got an answer. The number to get in, 888-914-9149. You know, I think back to that horrible period. I thank God I don't live through it. John Paul II lived through it. A lot of saints, you think of St. Maximilian Kolbe and Edith Stein and others who saw the horrors of that time. 1939 to 1945, the entire world was involved in war. A war that, you know, back then, we didn't want to forget because of how it started. And it started because of one man. Adolf Hitler had an ego that could not be satisfied. He also had a horribly bent understanding of the reason for the world's problems. And for him, it came down to one group of people, and that was the Jews. And his solution, it's what he called the final solution, was to kill as many of them as he could. Most of all, what that meant, right? He did what was unthinkable. He built concentration camps. He rounded up Jews. It wasn't just Jews, though. A lot of people are like, oh, just the Jews got killed. No. Yeah, the Jews got massacred a massive number. But there were also blacks. There was also priests, a lot of Catholics, a lot of homosexuals, a lot of the intellectuals of the day, those who were mentally unstable, the physically challenged, all terminated in these concentration camps, all terminated. You're physically incapacitated, that's not going to go well. So what would happen? They'd gather these people up, they put them in cattle cars, truck them off to these camps. Once they got to the camps, the abuse began. So often, many of them, when they went to exterminate them, they'd say, hey, we're going to put you in these showers. Only to be gassed to death with Cyclone B. Eventually, 6 million Jews were killed in these camps. And people of a certain generation know about this. And if you've ever, and I say this to every, this is something I really believe. I think every citizen of the planet, if it's at all ever possible, you should walk through the concentration camps of Auschwitz or one of the concentration camps that were erected just to see how evil can manifest. So you can see man's inhumanity to man. And so that you'll never, we'll never, ever see something like this ever happen again. You think, oh, never happen again. Never say never. Sin is a way of really darkening the mind and hardening the heart. And history is a way of repeating itself. I remember when I went into the concentration camp, my wife was on this particular trip with me. We had taken a pilgrimage to Poland. And we went into Auschwitz. She was so moved by the cells, the displays just filled with baby shoes. Another one, you walk down, it's filled with human hair. Another one, the brushes and the combs and the mirrors and the compacts that they had taken from all these women. They just filled these rooms. It's unimaginable. Rooms filled with suitcases and shoes. It's just unimaginable. Then you see how they were forced to live, and you see the torture that these people went through. You might remember that a little bit better than maybe your kids or maybe your grandkids. Our younger generations don't remember this. That's what I'm so shocked by. You would think that this would be a huge life lesson for everyone, but it's not happened. Do you know why? The reason I say that is because a 50-state survey, this was done a couple years ago. They did this 50-state survey, and they found that 63% of the respondents did not know that 6 million Jews were murdered, and that 36% of them thought that it was just a few Jews, maybe 2 million or less. They had no idea the number, the scope of what happened. Additionally, although there were more than, and this is a striking figure to me, when I found it out, I was stunned. I thought, what do you have, a dozen of these camps erected, Germany, Poland, right? Now, 40,000 camps. 40,000 camps and ghettos in Europe during the Holocaust. 48% of the respondents couldn't name a single one. That's almost one out of two people couldn't name a single one. Not even the most infamous of them all, Auschwitz, right? Or Treblinka. You couldn't name any of these. So here's the really surprising one. And I want to talk to Dr. Shoman about this. This is just hard for me to believe it. Nearly 20% of millennials and Gen Zers in New York, they believe that the Jews actually caused the Holocaust. I mean, they actually believe that the Jews were the reason for this. It's insane. And you know what? I know somebody. I have a friend who is I have a friend of a friend, right? I was at a party with a guy. A bunch of adults were there, and we were talking. And he says to me, Drew, I need some advice. I said, sure, what can I do for you? He goes, I'm worried about my son. I said, you're worried about your son? Why? He says, I think he's becoming radicalized. I said, what do you mean radicalized? Oh, he's on the web. And I thought he was going to talk about Islam. No, the stuff that he was watching perpetuated a very common myth. The Jews run all the banks. The Jews run the television industry. The Jews, run Hollywood. And he was going off on this whole anti-Semitic thing. And this guy was saying his son was saying this to him, and he wanted my advice. And, when he said radicalized, I thought he meant Islam. No, he meant a spirit of anti-Semitism. And it really took me back a little bit because I didn't expect that today, not in our culture, not after our history, not after the documentaries that are broadcasting and all the things, but he believed, that was the case. And when you got 20% of millennials and Gen Zers believing the Jews caused this, when you got the internet spreading these lies, when you talk about blaming the victim, when you got a California public school a few years ago that assigned an eighth grade class to debate if the Holocaust was real or not, I quote, they wanted to debate whether or not it was merely a political scheme to create influence and public emotion and to gain wealth. That shows exactly why we're having some real problems with our public memory. So I've invited today on Holocaust Remembrance Day, to join the conversation, Professor Roy Shoman. He's an adjunct professor of theology at Ave Maria University and at Holy Apostles Seminary. We've spoken to him about all sorts of things, from the Jewish roots of our faith to Salvation is from the Jews. And you are more than welcome to join us here. By the way, that is a good book. Check out Salvation is from the Jews, the role of Judaism in salvation history. And maybe you're not Catholic. Maybe you are maybe you are Jewish. He wrote a book. It's called Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ. Talks about their journey into Catholicism. And feel free to join us anytime, 888-914-9149. His website is salvationisfromthejews.com. Professor, thank you for joining us. Good to have you back.
Thanks. Thanks for the invitation.
When I went to school, it was basic part of world history. You learned about the Holocaust. Of course, you watch any documentary history channel, you're going to learn about it. We know people who fought for it, perhaps our grandfathers or fathers, right? Many of them have passed away. What's going on? I mean, have we reached a state where this is not being taught anymore and people they've lost the facts? I mean, what's going on that this is not, the truth of this horror is not being instilled in the next generation?
There are about 40 factors that one could point to. One is, frankly, people aren't being taught anything in school nowadays, and it's so culturally biased, it's so politically correct. They probably don't want an overemphasis on Western history, on European history or American history.
Right.
So part of the problem is just, I'd hate to think what those same studies would show about, how many people knew who George Washington was or something. I have no idea.
Right.
But so overall, the education is a problem. The other thing is the political landscape has basically over the last 20 or 30 years has basically turned Israel into the villain of the world and the Jews into the villain of Western civilization. You mentioned the canards, which, you know, there's some statistical basis to them, but, you know, that the Jews control the media, that the Jews control Hollywood, that the Jews control the banks and so forth. And they have gone from being the like heroic persecuted underdog to being the persecuting tyrant. They've gone from being David to being Goliath in the cultural view of things.
Yeah, you know, this is not new, though, right? I mean, this has happened across the millennia. And I don't understand why. Why for thousands of years have the Jews been the enemy?
Well, that I think is easy. That's easy. And that's because basically because history is dominated by the conflict between Satan and Christ, so to speak. And Satan can't get at Christ directly, but he can get at him indirectly. And there is, I have no doubt that there is a particular satanic hatred of the Jews and a particular desire on the part of Satan to keep the Christian community and the Jewish community at odds with each other, because we know from the Catechism of the Catholic Church that the second coming will happen after there's a widespread conversion of the Jews. Wow. Paragraph 674 says, quote, "The glorious Messiah's coming is suspended at every moment of history until his recognition by all Israel." And Satan certainly wants to delay the second coming, so he doesn't want to see a rapprochement between the Jewish community and the Christian, especially the Catholic community, which would enable a conversion to take place more easily, or entry into the church.
Weren't there prayers, correct me if I'm wrong, weren't there Catholic prayers? We used to pray for the conversion of the Jews, right?
We just had 3 days ago or so, exactly 3 days ago, January 18th to 24th used to be the octave for Christian unity. There used to be prayers each day. Each day was dedicated to another aspect of Christian unity. And day six was dedicated to prayer for the conversion of the Jews on the part of the Catholic Church. There were canonical prayers for the conversion of the Jews. The Good Friday service in the old Mass had a prayer for the conversion of the Jews in the, I forgot what it's called. In that part, that Friday afternoon service on Good Friday. There were religious orders that were founded just to pray for the conversion of the Jews. Because the church and the Christian world understood how central this was to the unfolding of salvation.
What do you think it's going to take to bring about the conversion of the Jews? I don't know how we do that. Everybody's so politically correct today, and there's a spirit of tolerance for everybody and their views, and I totally get that. But what do you think it will take? Some global event?
I think it'll take prayer and sacrifice on the part of good Catholics. That's my job. That's my apostolate. Is basically trying to generate concern and prayer in the Catholic community to pray for the conversion of the Jews. Because I, for one, would like to live to see the second coming.
So, okay, let's talk about that. I was going to talk about it, the rise of anti-Semitism and the lack of understanding and Holocaust, Remembrance Day and Hitler and a whole lot of things. But let's talk about the second coming. What's prophesied? What role do the Jews play in that? And how do you see it unfolding?
Well, first of all, we actually know a lot about the role of the Jews in the Second Coming from St. Paul's letter to the Romans. Of course, it was nice we just had his feast day 2 days ago for his conversion. And it's actually based on his letter to the Romans, that dogma that there has to be a conversion of the Jews to precede the Second Coming. He lays it out in Romans 11, and basically the scenario that he lays out is that God first revealed himself to the Jewish people, and then he revealed himself to the Gentiles through Christ, simultaneously veiling the eyes of the Jewish people. As St. Paul said, God gave them a spirit of stupor, eyes that should not see and ears that should not hear, down to this very day. Let their eyes be darkened so they cannot see. Because the plan was for first the relationship to be established between God and the Jews. Then the Jews would be held out of the church, for the church to spread fully throughout the non-Jewish world, the Gentile world, because St. Paul actually says very explicitly, through their trespass, salvation has come to the Gentiles. Their failure means riches for the Gentiles, that their rejection means the reconciliation of the world. In other words, the church would not have spread properly throughout the Gentile world had the Jews all flooded in. At that point, the church would have looked like it was part of Judaism, and especially for Jews, not for everyone on an equal basis. So God held them out. This is all straight from Romans 11. Until the full number of the Gentiles come in, and I'll read those verses. It's 11:25. Lest you be wise in your own conceits, brethren. I want you to understand this mystery, brethren. A hardening has come upon part of Israel until the full number of the Gentiles come in, and so all Israel will be saved. So that's basically the scripture that's the basis for that Catholic doctrine, that there has to be a widespread entry of Jews into the church for the second coming to take place.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. I often think of not just scripture, not only what the catechism has to say, but I have a deep devotion to divine mercy. And one of the things the Lord told St. Faustina, the first saint of the new millennium, it always struck me. He said this to her diary entry 429. He said to her, he says, you will prepare the world for my final coming. You know, again, who knows the day or the hour? And none of us know that. But he said to her another time, he said, speak to the world about my mercy, because it's a sign of the end times. After this will come the day of justice. So while there's time, let the world have recourse to this fountain of my mercy. Mm-hmm. But the Lord did that. She was the secretary of his mercy. He talked about the day of justice. He talked about his return. And he said she would prepare the world for his return. How do we put that in context?
Well, he also said a spark from Poland, right?
Yeah, right.
So I think, you know, well, anyway, I think that the only way to understand those words of Jesus in the St. Faustina's diary is to take them at face value, yeah, that this is a period of extraordinary mercy because it's the final act before the exercise of his justice and his return.
So do you see it far off? Are we living in that time?
You know, I asked my spiritual director about 25 years ago whether it was okay for me to think that the second coming was around the corner. And his reply was, sure, it's okay. It's fine to be wrong. St. Paul thought it was around the corner, and he was wrong.
That's so true.
So I do. But on the other hand, I'm aware that saints, not of which I am not one, but saints throughout history, St. Vincent Ferrer comes to mind. Saints have frequently preached that the second coming is right around the corner.
Yeah, it's true. And the vice postulator for the cause of St. Faustina's canonization, a priest by the name of Father Seraphim Mikolenko, he really believed that this revelation, this the divine mercy, was to prepare us for that particular time. And I don't know whether you are familiar with some other private revelation. There's a number of church-approved apparitions that have taken place that have predicted the return of our Lord. And again, we don't know the day or the hour, but you know, one of the key factors that we're talking about it today is our Jewish brothers and sisters coming in. Let me open the phones, too, before we talk more. If you want to get in, my guest today is a very gifted author and a professor, Professor Roy Shulman. And you can get in, ask your questions, share your comments, be part of the conversation at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. There was a YouTube series out called One for Israel that Maggie was telling me about. Maggie, maybe Professor Shulman knows about that. We want to share that with him?
I think I asked him last time he was on with us. Someone had told me about this YouTube channel, One for Israel, and I got hooked on watching these testimonies. They're beautifully shot. There's really intimate interviews with individuals who were raised Jewish and either had never really thought about Jesus or were kind of insulated from him. And little by little, he manifests himself in their lives, and they realize at some point, oh my gosh, the scripture that we've studied so well our whole lives comes alive in this person of Jesus, and I had no idea. Wow. They're like gorgeous testimonies. I think I asked Professor Shulman about it last time he was on, and
they are very beautiful, and I may be a little bit Jewish chauvinist here, but I think the sad part is, of course, they all become Protestant because
Really?
The Catholic Church doesn't have a real act of outreach to welcome Jews in.
Why is that?
That's why the Catholic Church doesn't have that outreach?
Yeah.
Well, no. I'm not here. I'm the new kid on the block. I can't accuse the church of dropping the ball, okay? I'll leave to you cradle Catholics. But the fact is that a lot of Protestant groups have active outreaches like One for Israel, like Messianic Judaism, like the Southern Baptists, like the Evangelicals. There's a Scottish mission in the heart of the Old City of Jerusalem that was founded to evangelize Jews. And there is nothing these days from the Catholic Church. It's the, you know, I'm okay, you're okay, we all want to be friends.
My guest today, Professor Roy Shoman, we're talking about not only anti-Semitism and Judaism and conversion into the Catholic faith, but also the second coming of Christ. I was in Israel not too long ago, Professor, on a pilgrimage last year in October. And I bumped into, well, I was talking to somebody, I don't know if it was with a guide or something like that. And I said to him, I said, I'd heard that there is a prophecy regarding the red heifer. And when this heifer is born without any blemish, you know, it can be used for the purification rites. And it's an indication that Christ will return. And then I saw a news report, like it was probably September, right before I flew over there. So it was clear in my head. I had thought that there was this perfect red heifer that had been born. Do you know anything about that? Maybe fill us in on that prophecy.
What I know about it is the following, that the red heifer is required for ritual purification of the priests in the temple. So without a red heifer, you can't have temple priests offering sacrifice. So there was this tremendous anticipation and eagerness to, you know, for there to be born a perfect red heifer that could then be used to reinstitute temple sacrifice. And supposedly one was born, I think it was actually in Texas, but I'm not sure.
It was in the
States. That got the Jews who want to see the temple rebuilt and the animal sacrifice resumed in Jerusalem, it got them very excited because they thought, well, maybe this is the sign that this is going to happen. Of course, they weren't thinking in terms of the second coming. They were thinking in terms of the first coming, right? Because they don't realize that the Messiah came.
They say the red heifer must be absolutely perfect in his redness. Even two hairs of any other color will disqualify it. Even its hooves must be red. And this guy said to me, oh, you know, I heard that same report, but they found one, you know, white hair on it or something like that. So maybe that was not the case. You know, I don't know.
It's not going to happen anyway. I mean, they're not going to rebuild the temple on the Temple Mount. I mean, not until World War III is over, because it would start World War III.
Yeah, well, if we want our Jewish brothers and sisters to enter the Church of Jesus Christ, established the fulfillment of the Old Testament, then I guess this has got to be done away with. How big of an issue is this whole red heifer prophecy? Because it's out of the Old Testament too, isn't it? There are scripture quotes.
Yeah,
talking
no,
about the red
this, this is the desire to resume temple sacrifice is a very, very outlying, tiny sliver of eccentric Jews, even in Israel.
Madonna in Chicagoland, thanks for listening. And by the way, if you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. You can get in now. I know the phone lines fill up pretty quickly. Madonna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Good afternoon, Mr. Shoen. I've enjoyed your writing and listening to your lectures. You know, I have a question. I'm on the road, so I can't get the citation, but I do recall it was one of Pope Benedict's Jesus of Nazareth books. I believe it was the first one, which I think was on the Passion Week, in which he suggested somewhat obliquely, not that Christians should not evangelize Jews, but that it did not need to be a priority. And there was some controversy about that at the time. Do you recall that? And if so, what are your thoughts about that?
I don't recall the exact words, and my memory of what he said was essentially that although Christ is waiting for the Jews to enter the church, and although it's a very good thing, we should not condemn the Jews for their failure to recognize Christ, because their failure to recognize Christ is in part dictated by providence, which is exactly that that passage from Romans 11 that I read. God gave them a spirit of stupor, eyes that should not see and ears that should not hear, down to this very day. Let their eyes be darkened so they cannot see until the full number of the Gentiles come in. And then it will be time for them to have the veil lifted and enter the church. So I think that what Pope Benedict was saying was, you know, there are two sides of the coin. One is we're called to make disciples of all nations, and it's tragic that the Jews don't recognize Christ. But on the other hand, there's another mystery at work here. And I think that it's in that book where he says, even in this period where they're standing outside the door of the church, they are still playing a key role in the unfolding of salvation.
I see. And perhaps that's why they have removed that prayer for the conversion of the Jews from the holy. Perhaps that's why they have removed that prayer regarding the conversion of the Jews from the Good Friday prayers, do you think?
Professor, can you hear us? I think you might be having some technical difficulty. Professor, you there?
Mm.
All right, I'll tell you what, Madonna, I'm going to take a quick pause. We'll make sure that we're all connected here, okay? And we'll follow up. We're speaking today with Professor Roy Shoman. And today's Holocaust Remembrance Day. I wanted to talk about that, a little bit about Adolf Hitler. And we're seeing a rise in anti-Semitism in the culture today. And the history of the Holocaust really not being taught the way it is, and really its deep misunderstanding of it, has led us into a conversation about the return of Jesus Christ and the important role of the conversion of the Jews in all of that. Why not join the conversation? I'll take your call on the other side. The number here is 888-914-9149. Pull up a chair. Our conversation will continue right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio line, is hiring today with several positions throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois life insurance society not licensed in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, good afternoon. Hey, I'm speaking today with Professor Roy Shoman, professor of theology at Ave Maria University and Holy Apostle Seminary. All right, got to get that word right. And he wrote a book called Salvation is from the Jews, The Role of Judaism in Salvation History. And it's always a great conversation with him. That is a great read. Today, we remember the Holocaust. This is Holocaust Remembrance Day, a horrific moment in world history, and one that should never be forgotten. Of course, Hitler established these horrific death chambers. He established the first concentration camp after he came to power in 1933. That's how far back it went. And then the system grew. It included over about 100 camps divided into two types of concentration camps. There were slave labor camps in nearby factories. There were death camps for the extermination of the undesirables, including the Jews and those who were homosexual or physically or mentally challenged, or Catholics or intellectuals of the day. And they exterminated about 6 million Jews. They were murdered in the Holocaust. And this was systematic, and it was highly rationalized. And unfortunately, it went on way too long. It wasn't until those death camps were liberated, I think the world really saw the horror of what took place. And clearly, just as abortion is demonic, I really believe what Hitler did was demonic. I believe the man was under demonic influence. And we can talk a little bit more about that with Professor Shoman. But let me jump into the phones first, and we'll follow up on that. Professor, were we with Madonna? Is that what I have to go back to? Was she on hold or no? Okay. Joe in San Antonio, Texas. Good afternoon.
I guess. God bless you.
Thanks.
Yeah. I just have a comment that before the second coming of our Lord Jesus Christ is going to be a manifestation of the third temple. The third temple must be built for the Jews, and then it's going to be the appearance of what is called the Antichrist, which is going to deceive the Jews, making believe that this is the second coming of Christ.
Yeah, great point, Joe. I was going to get to that with the professor, too, at one point in time, but our conversation divulged a little bit. We talked about the red heifer. The other aspect of this is the return of Jesus Christ. What role does the Antichrist play prior to the second coming?
Well, first of all, it's always, in my mind, a good idea to be careful about what is actually dogma right. and what is a kind of church tradition of belief. Mm-hmm. Now, we have a lot of dogma, actual dogma, from the Catechism of the Council of Trent, which is back in the 16th century, about the Second Coming. And it states that three things must happen before the Second Coming. There has to be the appearance of the man of sin, of the Antichrist. There has to be what they refer to as the great apostasy, a widespread falling away from the faith, and the gospel has to be preached throughout the world. And then we know from the New Catechism that there also has to be a widespread conversion of the Jews. So there's no question that the appearance of the Antichrist, I mean, Catholics are actually not allowed to disagree with dogma. So we have to really believe there's going to be an appearance of the Antichrist. As a matter of fact, it's interesting to speculate whether, in fact, we might be seeing the great apostasy, because you speak frequently, of course, on the show, Drew, about about the extent of the falling away from the faith these days. And thanks to the internet and satellite radio and all of that, the gospel has come closer to being preached throughout the world than ever before. So all of those things are quite indicative. Now, the church fathers had a lot of specific anticipations about the Antichrist. And so there's a strong tradition that he will be of a Jewish origin, that he will, that the entire Jewish world will be, you know, fall under his sway, thinking he's the Messiah and so forth. But that is in the realm of, you know, common belief of the church fathers. It's not in the realm of dogma per se. And the world is so different now than it was in, you know, the fourth or fifth century, that it's actually, I want to stand back from it a little bit, because I think that what happens is in prophecy, you get a vision, so to speak. You get these images and you tend to interpret them fairly literally. And then it's only in hindsight that you see the extent to which, for instance, the Antichrist is supposed to sit in the temple and rule from the temple. Now, does that mean he's ruling from the temple? Or could the temple have been replaced by the church? And could it mean that he's ruling from the heart of the church? Because 2,000 years ago, you know, there was no Vatican, there was no Catholic church. So if they wanted to describe the Antichrist as being at the seat of the heart of God's religion, they would have said the temple. So you see the problem.
Yeah, no doubt. Well said, Professor. Really well said. Let's go back to the phones to take a few more calls. Joan in Vernon, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, hello. Hello.
Hi, Joan.
Hi. I just had a question about what grade or what age level would it be appropriate to teach the Holocaust to children?
Good question.
That is a good question, and it's not exactly my wheelhouse. I would say 10, 11, 12. I think the only healthy way to teach the Holocaust is actually from a spiritual perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't think you really want to teach the Holocaust as man's inhumanity to man, because really everywhere you look in the Holocaust, what you see is demonic influence absolutely swamping the individuals and inspiring them to depths of cruelty and sadism and slaughter that is not actually within human nature, so to speak. So I'm always a little reluctant for the Holocaust to be presented in purely human terms.
And we should talk about the spiritual side of this thing too, because I do think it's demonic. But, you know, there are some things, and it's so hard, I think. You know, you don't have to teach everything, and you don't have to be complex about how it's taught. Maybe in that sixth grade, you know, you teach some basics. But as you get into the higher levels of education, Professor, I mean, the Holocaust did a couple things. If you look at how the concentration camps came about, you know, you have to look at what was going on in the culture at the time. And we had government-sponsored killing in Germany at the time. The Nazis were emphasizing this racial purity. They had eugenics. Their national health and euthanasia was presented as a necessary program. You know, we had corruption in the medical profession there, the protection of human life and relief from human suffering. was no longer the focus, and it was a very slippery slope they were on. So I think maybe you get higher, you know, when you get into more advanced levels of education, you can talk maybe more about history, more about the ethics of what was going on. But I think early on you can talk about this, you know, in a very maybe basic way. How do you incorporate the spiritual? That's a big part of it. And I think it's an important part of it. Before we jump back to the phones, let's talk about that, because you and I during the break were talking about a shared view. I really believe Adolf Hitler was oppressed. I believe there was a demon. I think he, you know, he was probably even possessed by what he did. And that there is a satanic movement behind this, and it manifested in a very visible way. Your thoughts on the spiritual underpinning to the Holocaust?
The former chief exorcist of Rome, Father Gabriele Amorth, said, quote, "Without a doubt, Hitler was personally consecrated to Satan. His first springboard to public prominence was an occult society in Munich called the Tool Society, which was run by an occultist named Dietrich Eckhart. The very last paragraph of Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, which of course is kind of his Bible of anti-Semitism, is a dedication of that work to his mentor, Dietrich Eckhart, who boasted that he had given Hitler the power to communicate, had initiated Hitler and given him the ability to communicate with the powers, which were the demonic powers. And Hitler referred to Dietrich Eckhart at times as his John the Baptist.
Wow.
There's no question that he was occultly initiated into a state of demonic influence, let's say, if not total possession, in his occult development, let's say, until he became, because before he was a politician, before he was a secular politician, he rose through the ranks of this occult society, the Tool Society. And he was totally obsessed with this Germanic occultism.
Yes, he was.
There's story after story after story. I mean, it was his life. And then, of course, you have the SS, which was run as an occult brotherhood. And the SS officers, you know, had to torture animals to death and so forth. It was full of occult initiation rites.
Wow. Yeah, and the Vatican chief exorcist, as you point out, he says, "I have no doubt that Hitler was possessed." It doesn't surprise me. I think it was Pope Pius XII, who was the Pope at the time, tried to actually do a long-distance exorcism. I don't know if he can do it long-distance, but he is the Pope. So clearly he saw this as a spiritual battle and engaged in it spiritually as well. That is such fascinating stuff. Let me jump back to the phones and we can talk more about this on the other side as well. Jen's in Fullerton, California. She's got a comment for you, Professor.
Oh, hi. I saw the Virgin Mary appears to Harvard professor part 1 through 4 and a couple of other your conversion stories, and I love listening to it. I'm hoping to evangelize to my Jewish family members. But anyway, I wanted to know what other divine messages maybe you've gotten from our Blessed Virgin Mary, or how you follow God's will nowadays.
All right. Hey, Professor, so maybe you should give everyone a thumbnail of... Well, let me do this. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, why don't you share that? Did you have an encounter with the Virgin Mary that brought about your conversion? We'll look at that. And if you want to join us, final probably 10, 15 minutes of conversation left. And that's all the time I have to hang out with you. But you can get in at 888-914-9149. Talking with Professor Roy Shoman, author of some great books. Grab a pen and paper. I'll get you plugged into his website. Okay. We're back with more right after this. Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, this September, I'm heading the Relevant Radio's Eucharistic Revival Pilgrimage to Italy with Nativity Pilgrimage. This is available to you. Information available at relevantradio.com/Italy.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Well, I don't know where the time goes. Only a few minutes left. I think maybe another 10 or so. If you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. If you're just joining us, having a lightning conversation today with Professor Roy Shoman. He's the author of a book called Salvation is from the Jews, The Role of Judaism in Salvation History. And he also wrote another great read, Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ. And you can find more by going to his website at salvation.com. is from thejews.com. And Professor, your story is an amazing one. We've had you on to talk about everything from the Jewish roots of the Eucharist to your conversion, but Relevant Radio has been very blessed. God continues to expand our reach. So there are new ears and new hearts all the time. Our last caller talked about your YouTube videos and your conversion. Do you mind maybe giving us a thumbnail or maybe sharing a little bit of how you became Catholic and are so passionate,
sure,
whether or not you're continuing to have these special experiences?
Sure. I think I can do it in 4 minutes. Anyway, I was born and raised Jewish. My parents were both German Jewish Holocaust refugees, actually. And I was very Jewish growing up. I took it very seriously. I was pious. I became an atheist at university. I went to MIT and, you know, the science attitude and everything. And I was brainwashed into thinking that, God is just a myth. I went on to Harvard Business School. I did very well there. So they invited me back to join the faculty. I was a professor of marketing at Harvard Business School in my late 20s. And that's when I fell into this very deep despair, because all my life I knew there has to be real meaning and purpose to life. I thought that would come from my relationship with God. Then as I grew older, I got distracted and thought, well, maybe it'll come from, you know, my success in the world or whatever. But at this point, I was already more successful than I ever expected to be. But there was no meaning at all to life. You know, we were just an accident. We lived for 80 or 90 years. Things happen with no pattern or meaning. We die, that's it, and so forth. But there was nothing that I could imagine out there in the future that would now give my life meaning. So because I was already, as I said, you know, more successful than I expected to be. So I fell into this very deep despair. And in that, I was walking in nature early one morning, just lost in my thoughts. I had probably been an atheist for 10 years by then. I just did not believe at all that God existed or that anything existed other than the material world. But I was just walking along in nature when the curtain between the physical world and the spiritual world disappeared. And I found myself looking into the spiritual world and seeing the spiritual world and seeing how the spiritual world was behind everything in the physical world. But more important than that was I fell into a state of very intimate communication with God. I saw my life as though I had died and was looking back over my life after death in the presence of God. And I understood everything as I would at that time. So I saw instantaneously how I would feel about everything. I saw that every action has a moral content that's weighed in the balance, and every take advantage of doing something of value in the eyes of heaven, we will be rewarded for all eternity. Every opportunity we let go by will be a lost opportunity for all eternity. I saw that absolutely everything that had ever happened to me had been the most perfect thing that could be arranged, coming from an all-knowing, all-loving God. And by far the biggest part of this experience was coming into the total awareness and experience that God himself, who had created everything that exists, not only knew me by name, not only had been arranging everything that ever happened to me to be the most perfect thing, but was paying attention to me as though I was the only creature I'd ever created, like he was leaning over me like a doting grandfather, caring not only about everything that happened to me, but how I felt at every moment, so that everything that made me happy made him happy, and everything that made me sad made him sad. And of course, there was never any reason to be anxious about anything, that life had this infinite meaning, because every moment has the possibility of doing something of value in the eyes of heaven, for which we will be rewarded for all eternity and so forth. So I was happier than I had ever been, but I didn't know who this God was and what religion to follow. And he didn't reveal that to me at the time. So I went back home. Everything was totally upside down. All I cared about was worshiping and serving. My Lord and God and Master had revealed himself to me, but I still didn't know what religion that was. So I prayed every night before going to sleep to know his name. And a year after that first experience, I thought I was woken up. I now know I wasn't. I now know that my body was asleep in bed. But I thought I was awake and led to a room and left alone with the most beautiful young woman I could ever imagine that I knew was the Blessed Virgin Mary. And she offered to answer any questions I might have for her. So I asked her about 6 or 7 questions, which she graciously answered. And then she spoke to me for a little longer, and then I went back to sleep. And the next morning when I woke up, I knew it had been Christ in that first experience, and I knew who the Blessed Virgin Mary was. I was totally and helplessly in love with her. And I knew I wanted nothing but to be as fully and completely a Christian as possible. Phew, 4 minutes flat.
You're good. You are good. You could take it as much time as you wanted. That's an absolutely amazing story. You don't have to answer this, but I'm just curious. What were the questions you asked the Virgin Mary? Were they personal, or were they more about faith or creation? Or
A couple of them were personal that I don't talk about, but I asked her at least three questions. I'm very glad I asked her.
Yeah.
I was absolutely overwhelmed by her presence. The first question I asked her, actually, because I was so overwhelmed by her presence, all I wanted to do was honor her appropriately. So my first thought was, boy, I wish I at least knew the Hail Mary, but I didn't. So the first question I asked her was what her favorite prayer to her was, thinking that she would teach me the Hail Mary.
Right.
But instead, she recited a prayer in Portuguese that I later identified as, O Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee.
That's awesome.
I asked her, most of my questions were just being overwhelmed by who she was. So at one point I asked her, how can it be? How is it possible? How can it be that you're so magnificent, that you're so glorious, that you're so exalted? How can it be?
Yeah.
And she just looked down at me almost pityingly and shook her head gently. And she said, oh, no, you don't understand. No. You don't understand anything. I'm nothing. I'm a creature. I'm a created thing. He's everything.
Wow.
And then, again, out of the desire to honor her somehow, I asked her what title she liked best for herself. And she said, I am the beloved daughter of the Father, mother of the Son, and spouse of the Spirit. Now, when I had gone to sleep that night, I had no idea of anything about the Blessed Virgin Mary. I had never opened a New Testament. I knew nothing except, you know, from hearing Silent Night at Christmas time. All of this was entirely new to me. But after this experience, I actually knew who she really was. And I actually knew from this experience that she is the channel through which all of the grace which flows from divinity into humanity flows.
How beautiful. I am so grateful you shared that. I really am. I only have a few moments left. Now, is that chronicled in your book too, Professor? Have you written your story down? How can people learn more about it?
Yes, it's chronicled in both books, actually, The Honey from the Rock and Salvation is from the Jews.
That's great. It needs to be told. We have to bring you back just to share your story, just to really let you unpack everything that went down. But let me grab another call or two here. And Jen, thank you very much for your call. I know she's on hold here, and she was wondering if you had any other communication since that experience.
You know what? I'm going to dodge that a little bit. We all have communication in prayer. In other words, you know, there's a whole spectrum from, you know, a voice of thunder speaking or something like that,
right,
to a feeling of consolation, a feeling of the Blessed Virgin Mary's protecting us, a feeling of God giving us a pat on the back, a feeling of being filled with love after receiving the Eucharist. There are all kinds of communications that I think, frankly, a Catholic in a state of grace periodically has.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Professor, I guess I'll sneak one last call in. I don't have a whole lot of time here. Marlene, could you make your comments kind of quickly? It'd be good to have you here. Good afternoon. Marlene, go right ahead.
Oh, yes. Hello. Wonderful discussion.
Thank you
so much. I was married for 60 years to a Jewish man who hated Christians, which I did not understand, and I'm grateful that I came from the boondocks because I had no idea what was going on. My husband was from Borough Park, New York, and I loved it there. I loved the Jewish religion. I was converted to Judaism, and I went through the mikvah and Orthodox, all of that, and I loved Judaism. And my husband, over the years, hated Christians so badly. And I hung in there because it said, if you stay with the man or the woman who's not Christian, that God will honor that. And so I did. And then one day my husband died, and that was shocking. But before they took him out, I prayed over him and put my hands on him for Jesus Christ to protect him. And then my husband came to me quite a few times.
Okay.
But then he came one night and said in my dream that he had met his friend Arnold Abramowitz from the high school.
Well, Marlene, I hate to do this to you. I only have about a minute left. I love the fact that you're sharing your story and 60 years of marriage. God bless you. What a beautiful story. I'm out of time, though, so I just want to give Professor Shulman the final thoughts. Professor, you heard her story. I believe that you know, he died, and then she had a dream that he met God. So it's kind of a synopsis of the story. But final thoughts from you, Professor.
Well, I think that, you know, my final thoughts are that story is evidence of why we should pray for the conversion of the Jews. We all owe Jesus. We owe the greatest gift that God ever gave mankind, which is Jesus and the Catholic Church. We owe it to the Jews. They brought it about. They prayed for the coming of the Messiah for 2,000 years. They were the apostles. They were the Holy Family. They were given the job of spreading the faith throughout the world, and the faith has been spread throughout the world. The whole world is benefiting from this great gift that came through the Jews, and it's time to return the favor, and we should now bring the Jews into the church through our prayers, through our gentle love and evangelization.
Well, this on the anniversary of Holocaust Remembrance Day, let's do that. Remember the Jews. Professor, thank you. Check him out. SalvationIsFromTheJews.com. That is his website. SalvationIsFromTheJews.com. Out of time for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow. Or not tomorrow. Next time our paths cross, we'll talk, okay? Please pray for me. Enjoy your weekend. God bless you.